Del Pilar. Some of you know me as a conservative Latino. Some of you know me as a fantasy sports pioneer who helped commercialize the industry with my good friend, Big John.
That's right, William. Big John, formerly of Sports Grumblings, currently of Nerd Fantasy Sports, famous the world over for my large girth and keen fantasy sports mind, as well as politics and other fun stuff. William, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, but I don't need to hear about your girth. That's between you and your wife.
That's absolutely true, and thank you very much for pointing that out. I'm sure that'll help my reputation more than harm it at any given point.
Well, you are called Big John.
That's true.
Gotta pick up a little bit.
I've earned it.
God, it's rolling off my tongue right now.
I've earned it. That's why.
There you go. Well, before we run off many of our conservative listeners.
That's true.
Let's lay out the lay of the land tonight.
Sure.
We're going to talk about the Super Bowl. We're going to talk about the COVID hypocrisy at the Super Bowl. We're going to talk about the pathetic refereeing. We're going to talk about overcoaching. It's pretty much going to be a Super Bowl show. We're going to talk a little bit of comedy at the end there with COVID. Well, I wouldn't call it comedy, but it's the comedic world. So, Big John, talk to me. What are your initial thoughts about the Super Bowl? And I want you to start with a hard-hitting piece here in terms of Joe Mixon.
Listen, that game went exactly the way we thought it would when we talked about it the last podcast, previewing the Super Bowl. But I'll tell you one thing. What happened to Joe Mixon? You're absolutely right. What happened to Joe Mixon? We said it last time. The best running back on either team, Joe Mixon. He was running the ball hard, but you know what, William? Sometimes these coaches, these young guys on the sidelines there, I think they outthink themselves. Joe Mixon on two key third and ones, on a fourth and one, not on the field even. Forget giving him the ball. He wasn't even on the field. So that was one less piece the Rams defense had to worry about. I don't know what happened to him. He was running the ball hard. But that aside, I thought the game was entertaining. I thought it was an interesting battle. It was low scoring like I thought it might be. Like, I didn't expect one of these, like, blowout 40-35 games. You know, I thought it would be in the 20s. As a matter of fact, I kind of sort of predicted a 23-20 game, if you recall the last episode. But good game. And again, the Achilles heel showed up. That Bengals offensive line showed up. And really, in the truest sense of the world, the Achilles heel of the Bengals team this season.
Oh, my goodness sakes. We're going to go and talk about other topics with the Super Bowl, but you saying that reminded me, the final play where he got sacked, Joe Burrows, Jalen Ramsey had fallen down, Ja'Marr Chase was wide open.
Yes,
they
he
just
was.
Bought him a couple more seconds.
Yep.
But that said, I thought there was overanalyzing of the game itself. The punt, I mean, going for it on fourth and one.
Horrible.
At midfield early on.
Horrible call.
It's like, what the hell happened to common sense? Look, a lot of the youngsters who do analytics really fall in line with the head coach's mentality of today. The analytics said this. The analytics said that. Well, if the analytics say jump off a cliff, as our parents used to tell us, are you going to jump off the cliff?
Yeah.
No. We lack common sense at times because going for it statistically, maybe the analytics say, hey, you're going to get it more often than not. But the problem is when you don't get it, as the Bengals did, they gave a powerful offense in Matthew Stafford and company, Odell Beckham and Cooper Kupp, a short field to play with. And that is deadly in a game like that.
It's deadly, and it doesn't take human emotion into account. Look, I'll expand it. But one of my prop bets, which I hit on, was the first kickoff to be a touchback, right?
Right.
Now, if you looked at the statistics, touchbacks between both kickers were roughly around 60%, right?
Right.
Why was I so confident that the first kick? Because everyone's hyped. No matter who's kicking off, that ball's sailing through the end zone. Because both kickers, first time I think in the Super Bowl, they were pumped. It's going to be, you know, coaches tend to be conservative. So really, you got to take human emotion into account. Going forward, fourth and one, like you said, on the first drive of the game, what's the upside? The upside is you get a first down and you get to keep marching the ball forward, right?
Right.
What's
right.
the downside? Very likely, you're in a 7-0 hole, very likely, all right?
Correct.
You can't have that in the Super Bowl. You got to be focused on winning. You can't be focused on your errors, right? Your shortcomings. So that's why it was a bad decision on my part, in my opinion, on the part of the Bengals. So and again, given that they went for it, why wasn't Mixon in? Why wasn't Mixon in? At least have him in. Put the thought in the Rams defense that Perine, on every short yardage play, Perine got the ball. I read, I looked up the stats. Perine as a short yardage back is not effective throughout the 2021 season. He only hit something like 2 out of 9 attempts. He wasn't that effective. Whereas Mixon, I think he converted in those situations something like 27 out of 40 times. He was the much better short yardage back and, of course, the better back overall. So, like you said, horrible decision making, horrible.
He had a couple of good runs. I mean, they were stuffing him, but there were a couple of runs where he got 8-10 yards and showed, hey, he can run through that line. And
but they never built on it. That was the problem. They would get one solid run. Then it would seem like they would try to pop it to Chase or Higgins, and that the effectiveness of the run of the play action is that when the defense is convinced you're going to run the ball,
it's convinced you're going to run the ball. This is one of the instances of why I believe head coaches, young whiz kids, should not be calling their plays because they forget to be a head coach.
Right.
They get so wrapped up in being too cute with the playbook, et cetera, that they forget to be a head coach. That's the type of situation where Dick Vermeil would have gone, son, just play some football.
Right.
Don't get cute with the game. You know, and it paid off. Kurt Warner, I mean, that was the best offense we've seen in decades, and he knew how to use them.
Right.
I think what bothered me the most was refereeing. Oh. I found the refereeing to be disgustingly bad. And here are some of the tweets I saw. Here's one tweet responding to the USA Today talking about the Bengals should hold their heads high. And the tweet said they were only a legit ref away from winning.
Mm-hmm.
Another tweet talking about the officiating is a non-issue here. The tweet says, if you believe this, then you believe Ryan Tannehill can get the Titans to the Super Bowl and win.
Okay.
And another tweet was, it was a fitting conclusion to what was an epic playoff season for the NFL. And the tweet is, what the bleep were you watching? The refs ruined it.
Right.
I got to be honest, John. Those are my tweets.
Oh, see, that's why I was chuckling.
But at the end of the day, there were many tweets like that. Yeah. I will never recognize the Rams as legitimate winners. I believe the refs gave him the game, and here's why. There were bad calls throughout the whole game.
Right.
However, when you have a lot of time left, it doesn't affect your strategy or tactics. You're still clinging to your playbook and your game plan, especially in a game like this that was going back and forth.
Right.
The T. Higgins TD, where Jalen Ramsey played the part of a bobblehead was outrageous. But what people don't realize is early on, there was a hold by Ramsey that negated the drive.
Right.
And I think they had the result in a field goal. So there were just bad calls going all the way. But when you have a bad call, a phantom call that if not called puts the Rams in a 4th and 8. I mean, that's magic. That's what everybody wants to see at the end. Instead, they get a fresh set of downs. And here's what people who have never played sports or fat ass people thinking they can call a game better or thinking they know best don't realize is when they got a fresh set of downs, that Bengals defense was completely deflated. Now, and then as you saw, there were other penalties that resulted. But what many don't realize is on that phantom call, it was a clear false start by the Rams line. So that play should never have even happened, which would have resulted in 3rd and long. Right. But at the end of the day, my take for this game, they were letting them play up until that point. So to me, the refs gave the Rams the game. And what burns me up, it's like the Rams had this pipeline for corrupt ref calls. Let's not forget the Saints call where the guy literally mugged the Saints receiver there.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Yes, that's what it was, wasn't it?
Where it was 3 years ago, when they played the Patriots in the Jersey Lynch Patriots.
In fact, that play is why I rooted for the Patriots in the Super Bowl to beat the Rams. I just loathe when a team wins because of the refs. And the Rams were given that Super Bowl, and Bengals Nation was robbed of a fair shot to bring one home.
Yeah, and look, I know, like you said, there's going to be Rams fans out there that said, oh, what about the missed call on T. Higgins, the face mask and everything? Yeah, okay. But I think your point is the important one. Up until the last 2 minutes of the game, the refs were a non-factor, quite honestly. They let everybody. You know how in baseball they say you don't care what an umpire strike zone is as long as it's the same throughout the whole game, right? So if he's calling high strikes, cool, high strikes, you know? Same thing in football. If you're going to be ticky-tacky, be ticky-tacky the whole game. If you're going to let them play the whole game. And to me, there were several times during that game I turned to my friends here when we were watching the game just saying, wow, they're letting them play. You know, I'm seeing aggressive defensive back play. I'm seeing aggressive tackling, and no one seems to be, you know. But then those last 2 minutes, that was a crying shame. And on top of everything you just mentioned, here's another one. Aaron Donald was lined up offsides on the final play for the Bengals on that 4th-and-1 where they tried to throw the ball again instead of running Mixon. And people, yeah, that's an automatic first down because he was lined up in the neutral zone. So, and if you saw the pictures on Twitter, literally he was at least a foot and a half, like his entire helmet was past the neutral zone. So,
you know, Joe, one thing about the refs that I've noticed is a lot of them are old. They can't run with these players. You know, but we got enough refs covering quadrants or sectors or whatever. I'm like, you still see it, that they can't keep up. I mean, and as you get older, you lose eyesight, vision.
Oh, yeah.
It's I don't know. Going back to steroid Hockley in that Denver Broncos and Chargers game with the fumble, that wasn't a – I get flabbergasted because the NFL doesn't seem to want to do anything to improve the refereeing. And then they bring the instant replay. And in the playoffs, I'm like, that should be a booth call, the instant replay. Meaning, it's like, look, that pass interference isn't technically an instant replay. We're going to get this right.
Yeah.
You know, that was blatant pass interference. We're calling the shots, so it's a fair game. And some common sense things get bogged down by rules. It's kind of like a catch. What's a catch now? And they've got this convoluted system that refs have to go through in their heads per the rules when you can look at it and go, okay, it's not a catch. It's kind of like when I want to give a bonus to somebody, an employee, I can't because the other employee can take me to court and say, well, we had the same job. Why didn't I get the bonus? Well, because he's a better employee.
Right.
You know, so they try to generalize everything to the point it hurts the game more than helps it. Any thoughts on that before we move on?
Yeah, I think, look, most referees know what's a good call and a bad call. And I think a lot of them suffer from they don't want to be graded poorly. So a lot of times they will make a safe call as opposed to the call that they think is right. In this particular case, I don't know what could have been done because that T. Higgins, the two that stand out to me was the T. Higgins call, the face mask, which was obvious to everyone, and the Logan Wilson at the goal line when he swatted the ball away from Cooper Kupp, which was a great play, by the way. And they called the holding on that. And it just blew my mind. I don't think that particular was a penalty, even in a closely called game, and certainly not a penalty in the type of game that was being called up until that point. But you're right. Until the NFL decides that they're going to have full-time referees that they pay to train all year and, you know, that they maybe set up a mandatory retirement age and all that sort of thing, you're always going to have this, always.
I mean, when they were announcing the MVP, I thought the Rams were going to go, and we'd like to thank the refs today.
We'd like to thank the referees.
Yeah. And the refs going, you know, I was waiting. I was waiting for the refs. There was!
Yeah,
yeah. That's a corrupt, I think. People don't realize how bad referee can be. I won't talk about it tonight, but I'll tell why I loathe the referees, and it goes back to the Portland Lakers series when Shaq was there, and that big train of a man barreling down, and the refs looking at him, and dude, he's running people over. It's a I don't know. Actually, I do know. It's just I'm so frustrated. But
okay.
Let's go on to some good news here for you, Big John.
Yes.
You and Fantasy Nerds. Talk to me about some of these prop bets.
Oh, yeah. We got lucky. So, first of all, I hit my game bets.
I don't think you really want to use the term lucky as much.
Right.
As
lucky is not the right word. But I maximized my probabilities as any good analyst would. So we hit both our game bets, which was we had a futures bet on the Rams at plus 800 that we picked up in October. And we also put we took the Bengals at 4.5 points as a hedge bet. Since the Rams won by 3, we covered on both bets. So that was a nice payday. I also hit one of my favorite props that I mentioned last episode, which was any non-quarterback to throw a touchdown pass, which, of course, paid off plus 1,100, and that came from Joe Mixon, the halfback option touchdown. I also hit, like I said, on the opening kickoff to be a touchback because, like I explained to you, hyped up.
Right.
Kickers are hyped up,
that's
so
right.
They kick them right through the end zone now. So that to me was an easy prop to hit. I didn't hit on Joe Mixon as MVP, obviously. That went to Cooper Kupp, which, again, I thought was deserved. But if you had given it to Aaron Donald, I think, aside from the referee that you wanted to give it to, I think you could have had either Aaron Donald get it or a sharing between Kupp and Donald. Because, quite honestly, people don't realize that the MVP voting takes place before the end of the game. Like, the NFL tends to collect those votes around the two-minute mark, right?
Right, right. Well, it's also fans voting, too, now.
But I think that's only, like, 20%. But even then...
It doesn't matter.
Right, but even then, that's still... The voting for that closes relatively early on NFL.com or whatever, right? So my point is that at the two-minute mark, right after roughly when Cooper Kupp caught the winning touchdown pass, at that point, absolutely, I would have voted for Cooper Kupp because he was the only thing keeping the Rams afloat offensively, right?
Right, right. And let me say this about Cooper Kupp. Last episode I said I'm not a big believer in wide receivers getting into the Hall of Fame, but there's always exceptions. When receivers play like that over their careers, like Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, I would never argue against being in the Hall of Fame because the exceptional receiver can make the quarterback, an average quarterback, look good.
Better. Yeah.
But most of the time, it's the quarterback that makes the receiver look good. Look at Alvin Harper in Dallas.
Right.
Players like that. All righty. So your prop bets in 10 seconds. Where can they find out more of of this information?
FantasyNerds.com, your resource for sports excellence. So check us out, FantasyNerds.com.
And I love the color. I love the nerd luminescent green. All right, people, one more thing on the Super Bowl before we go to the hypocrisy of the mask is ratings have been delayed. And I think that's because network television, about 60-70% of Americans say they were going to watch it on TV, maybe 80%. But the point is, I don't think those are going to give the numbers that the NBC wants to share. So I think they're waiting for all the streaming. And I also believe once they get all these other numbers in, I think we're going to clear 100 million where last year they did it. I think all the negativity of last season is gone. And it was a great, magical season. Literally every weekend there were great games and as you told me off camera earlier, the playoffs were phenomenal.
Oh, absolutely.
The Super Bowl was really two losing teams, the Chiefs and the Bills, in terms of excitement of a game.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about the mask hypocrisy. And bear with me. I've got a bunch of images here in regards to celebrities, stars.
Right.
But here was the rule. The NFL has issued guidelines for people watching from the stands this year, including a mask mandate that requires all spectators over age 2 to wear a mask while inside the stadium, regardless of vaccination status. Now, Ben Affleck, Jennifer Lopez, you know, Ellen, who makes her viewers who come to the studio wear masks,
right,
is out there parading Emmett Smith, Ye, better known as Kanye West. It was just a pathetic nightmare. And to make it worse, the kids were forced to wear the mask. The L.A. Youth Orchestra.
Right.
And I played a mean trumpet, by the way. Oh, okay. But they were forced to wear masks while the singers, players, and fans were maskless. I mean, it's nobody cares about the kids. And to make it worse, Eric Garcetti, I have to read this quote when asked today about the mask. I wore my mask the entire game. And when people ask for a photograph, I hold my breath and put it here, and people can see that, Garcetti said, referring to the mask in his hand. There's a 0% chance of infection from that. That was nothing but a bald-faced lie. They have him in a little circle there without his mask, just chatting away. So unless he held the record for holding his breath, is what he says he does, the hypocrisy knew no bounds. And that's just how it went. Over and over and over with these stars. And this game was out in LA. Today, kids are forced to be to socially distance and wear masks. And they lie and say the kids don't mind when papers have come out. What would you like to change? I don't want to wear a mask. They have a video of a group of kids in another state who were told you don't have to wear masks. It was as if they had just watched the lunar landing, or they won the lottery, how right. happy they were. This is disgusting. And if you're somebody who believes in these masks, you believe that it's okay for us to lose our rights while the elites don't have to. And to make it worse, all these individuals, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, 99% of it, or 70% of it, rather, to be fair, is Democrats. You see them at these events. They're maskless, but the hired help, and out here tends to be mostly Latino, they're wearing the mask. I'm like, and these are the people you believe are fighting for us. It's like, get a clue, wake the bleep up, and let's move forward, because we're going to have to learn how to live with COVID.
Well, look, I tend to be a little bit more torn on this subject than you are, and I'll tell you why. As a libertarian, obviously I'm very concerned in my individual rights, and I do believe in what the conservatives have co-opted from us, the libertarians, when we talk about individual determinism and body autonomy and stuff like that. So I am sympathetic to it. However, I have to admit that sometimes you can have the right message and the wrong messengers, right? You can have the right message, but the wrong messenger bringing you the message. And in this particular case, I think that you had the initial nonsense that started around COVID. Then you had the reaction from the opposing team. So initially, without getting too much into it, this is the way I see it, was the Republicans, the Trump supporters, initially came out, knowingly lied about COVID being serious, knowingly lied about it being nothing more than a political hoax. And this is on tape. Bob Woodward.
It's not on tape.
Well, it is on tape. Bob Woodward interviewed Trump, and Trump admitted that he said, I lied about COVID because I wanted to protect the people. That was his excuse. Now, whether you believe him or not.
I think it was Trump who said that, but either way, Woodward and Bernstein made their bones through deep throat, not through any reporting. And ever since then, all they've been doing is deep throating the Democrat Party.
Well, maybe, but in this particular case, he had a phone call, and Trump took the phone call.
Oh, that's from his book, right?
And it's on record, yes, yeah, and it's on record.
I've got to see that.
Trump admitted to it, okay? So believe me.
But hold on. Everything we said as conservatives that were mocked is coming true today. Science has not changed. Lies have not held up.
Well, no, this is where I disagree with you. I think that, look.
The science has not changed.
Listen. Here's again, I'm literally trying to understand both sides. Look, Democrats have clearly, or liberals, or left statists, whatever you want to call them, they have clearly taken advantage of the situation. There's no doubt, right?
Never let a tragedy go to waste.
Well, that was Rahm Emanuel who said that. Yeah.
That's what they live by.
Yeah, never let a good emergency go to waste, or a good crisis go to waste, right?
That's their motto.
But you have to understand something, too. Like, I honestly think, and again, I'm speaking as – I don't know if you know this or not. I actually have my first degree was in biology. I'm married to a microbiologist who is on the New York City alert team for viruses and pandemics and things like that. Not that I'm an expert. I have some knowledge of these things, okay? The Fauci is not a criminal. Fauci is not someone out to get your kids. Burks is not out to put you in the, you know, that's all nonsense, okay? At the same time, you're right. The hypocrisy of demanding masks outside the stadium, and then when people are in the stadium, they take their masks off, or they take them off for a performance, or they're not socially distancing.
They never had their mask on.
No, but that's what I'm saying.
Here's one of the kickers. Yeah. One of the kickers is when they put the mask on, they're masking it. When you wear a mask, like they say you're supposed to, you get over that. When you're not accustomed to wearing a mask, that's what you do. And look, at the end of the day, the science was always there. It's just they flat out lied about it, or they twisted it, or, and you know as well as I do, stats are always manipulated to find the answer. But here's the kicker. And this is somebody coming from a country that saw two dictators where if you spoke out of turn, one of those dictators was going to make you disappear. When they started censoring scientists, that's when I knew it was all fake. It was because in a society as ours, you let the debate happen and then you let people make the decision. So when somebody hears only one side, that's where they're going to blindly believe. And if I take it simple, when you see these pictures, when you see the videos of the elites not wearing their masks and the help being forced, that's your bottom line answer. We can go through whatever shenanigans, and I don't mean shenanigans in a negative way. I mean the political double talk. But there's obvious, and it's kind of like common sense. Fourth and one, 50-yard line. We just talked about it. Common sense versus analytics. Common sense versus somebody trying to drown you in stats and double talk, et cetera, et cetera.
But William, look, you're right, but at the same time, you have to understand your side of the fence. And by the way, when I say your side of the fence, that doesn't imply that I'm on the other side of the fence, right?
I understand that, but it just shocks me as a libertarian. You're okay with these freedoms being taken away.
No, I'm not okay with them. Believe me, I'm not okay with them. But at the same time, I don't want the rule of idiocracy to take hold. So, for example, when I see Trump supporters who, in order to defend their individual rights, this is what I meant by the right message but the wrong messenger, in order to defend their individual rights, they have COVID parties. Somebody put
this is a few people do that. No, but it wasn't just the Trump supporters. A lot of football players who are BLM supporters were throwing parties in the preseason.
Well, let's not
that's the double talk that I'm talking about.
Let's not confuse issues right now.
It wasn't our Trump supporters.
Let's not confuse issues right now. We can talk BLM later, okay?
No. But what I'm saying is they were leftists who were supporting all the mandates and everything on that. And they're having parties.
But
they didn't want us to know about it.
Fair enough. I got you. But at the same time, you're looking at people. First of all, you get people who don't know anything about science. And I'm literally talking about high school dropouts who all of a sudden think they're virologists of the first order. Right?
We call them Democrats.
They call everything, quite honestly. And here's the thing. Who put this term herd immunity in people's minds? Because every time I've heard some rube talk to me about herd immunity, they don't know what they're talking about. They think herd immunity means that we should all – listen, even Trump said it. Get herd immunity. We need to get to herd immunity. You know how you get to herd immunity? You get to herd immunity when the rate of infection is below one, okay?
Hold on. As we were kids, your parents, my parents, everybody, I never saw it. But when somebody caught chickenpox, they didn't care if the other kids in the family caught it, because once you caught it, that was it. Yeah. So that's a form of herd immunity there. So herd immunity
it's not the same thing,
it's
right?
It's not the same, but you're talking scientifically.
Of course.
And I get that, and I agree. But in generalities, when people talk about herd immunity, they're talking about being able to live with this pandemic, get it, you know, catch
it.
Gain your natural immunity.
This is where I refuse to give credit to the majority of Trump supporters, all right?
It has nothing to do with Trump supporters.
That's what the average American
would think. You're so hung up on Trump supporters.
I am.
Don't look at the fact it's the average American.
No, but it's not the average American. It's only about half of the average American.
So what about all these leftists who are black and Latinos who didn't want the vaccine? They're not Trump supporters.
Correct.
That's the bulk of that culture, and they vote leftist. So, again, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. Yeah. I'm completely disagreeing with you're trying to lay the blame on Trump. Because
I'm not. I said that from the beginning.
I'm sorry, Trump supporters.
I'm not laying the blame on Trump supporters. I am.
Sure you are. You just did.
No, you said
all these Trump supporters holding these parties.
Yes, because, listen, there's two sides that are contributing to this overall mess, right? Like, listen, in my utopia, this is what happens, right?
Well, thank you for acknowledging the utopia.
Yes, I agree. In my utopia, the government or whoever was in charge, Trump at the time, comes out and says, look, we're dealing with this pandemic. We really don't know what it's about right now, okay? So let's be a little smart, people. Wear a mask. Don't go to these crowded events. Stay home for a while. Listen,
and that's where the propaganda, even early on, you don't need the mask because they don't work.
No, they never said that, William.
Because they will not stop. Yes, they did. They're fucking on video saying that.
No, they said
that. Even Biden says, you get the vaccine, you won't catch COVID. I mean, the double talk was there. See, John, hold on. We got to move on.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you the last word.
Sure.
But at the end of the day is, you scientifically, I will never disagree with you. But what they were saying to what I call the sheep, and sheep on both sides.
Yeah.
See, that's the difference is I'm not going to blame Trump or just Democrats. I look at the elites who are spewing the double talk out and then censoring those who were coming up and saying, well, hold on here. So the average person never had a chance to learn about herd immunity and how you need to look at it because they were censored. I give you the last
word. Yeah, I'll agree with that. Yeah, listen.
Damn right.
On both sides of the equation, the bottom line is both sides did not trust the people to make up their minds for themselves.
It's not a matter of trusting people to make their own decisions as much as they wanted to force their own beliefs on them for ulterior motives.
Fair enough.
But there's a big difference in that.
But there is, but at the same time, like, listen, I'm not a big believer in government conspiracies, and I'll tell you why. Because a government conspiracy assumes hyper-competency on the part of the government. And I don't believe the government's competent in anything.
John, that's where you're wrong from the military, I can tell you. The government is pretty good at setting protocol, but it's not the government. It's the people working within the government. So in the military, after the big fiasco, oh, my God, I should know this, but I'm forgetting the name of the guy who pretty much was giving the Russians. If we had gone to war against the Russians in the 70s, they would have won because of this individual. They made a movie about him. Oh, I feel like an idiot. I'm drawing a blank. But the point is, since then, I can tell you, security is top-notch in the military. But the fallacy is there's always an idiot.
Of course.
I was an idiot once. I'll tell you that story off camera.
Okay.
Because it's like, oh, my God, you didn't get in trouble? Like, nobody found out. Yeah. But the point is the government is good at hiding bleep. You know?
Yes, yes. I'll agree with you on that.
And at propaganda.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that. And I do believe there should have been more transparency. Again, on both sides. Listen, if someone came out and I firmly believe this. I firmly believe Fauci is not a politician. He's not a policymaker. He's a scientist. So a lot of times he responded like a scientist. And what he didn't realize is when he did that, people take it and use it, right? So I would just advise people be reasonable, okay?
I agree. But Fauci has a lot of his background that people weren't aware of profit making, being on boards, et cetera, and all that plays a role. And my issue with Fauci is he was never a doctor. After he got his degree, he went into the government bureaucracy. And when you don't work with patients and you become a bureaucrat,
he's not an MD.
When you become a bureaucrat, it's like you said. These idiots in the government.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying, well, Fauci was not always being truthful, but he also deceived people with wanting to project something. And it was Fauci who said he lied about the mask. I just remembered to protect people.
He lied about what?
That he lied about the mask, saying that he was saying it because we needed to protect people. Look, the masks don't work. Science has shown that.
Well, listen, the masks, look, K95s work.
N95s?
Huh?
You mean the N95s?
Yeah, the KN95s, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
They work the best. KN94s work a little bit better. And
do they stop the virus from transmission?
Listen,
going through that?
You're
a biologist. The molecules, how the size they are.
Listen, the cloth masks that most people wear are not as effective as the N95s.
Have you ever worn a mask to sandblast? And those are some of the best around.
Yeah.
They don't work. I have. Eventually, afterwards, you take that stuff off and there's all crap there. It just helps limit it. You know, again, common sense dictates reality. And sure, we can blind people to it and bog them down with science, which is like stats. You know, I guess my issue, the bottom line, this is the science is decided. We both know good and well it's not. It's hypotheses meant to always be challenged.
Right. Science is a process. It's not a discipline.
So,
process.
The moment a politician goes, the science is settled, I'm like, you're lying.
Well,
because some
facts are settled, but you're right, science isn't. But anyway.
Anyway, let's move on. Because, and my friends, just because we disagree like this doesn't mean I don't love Big John. I don't need to hear about his girth, but I love Big John.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
All righty. We're going to talk a little bit about one of the big stories in the NFL. I'm just going to mention that we don't need to talk about it, but people believe OBJ, Odell Beckham, tore his ACL. So how much that impacts him, we'll know a little bit down the road. But I'm going to make one comment, then I'll allow John one comment, then we're going to move on for time. I wouldn't give him the money he may be looking for until I know he's 100% healed and who else is out there. Because ACLs and wide receivers, they do slow him down. He's not the same receiver he was before the first one. And how this one's going to affect him, who knows? Now, that said, after the first one, he was still an elite receiver. But how's this one going to affect him? Yeah. And my issue with OBJ isn't him. It's his dad. His dad can't keep him from getting in trouble.
Yeah.
You know? So what's your take on OBJ before we talk about the bigger story?
Listen, I think OBJ, right before he hurt his knee, was a clear redemption story this year, right? I mean, leaving the Browns the way he did, he was literally someone that the players wanted, right? They knew how good he was, but the public perception around him had clearly turned negative, you know?
Right.
And the fact that he landed with the Rams, he was productive, right? Ever since he got there, he scored as many touchdowns as Cooper Kupp, I think.
Yeah, but that's the thing, too. In essence, you had two number one receivers on that team. Who are you going to double team?
Right. No, he benefited from Kupp. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, in defense, they both benefited from each other, but Kupp was doing it before
Odell
got there. Yeah. Odell wasn't doing it in Cleveland, was he?
So the thing also is, the other thing people, so I feel bad for Odell Beckham because I kind of liked him. Even when he was the Giants, I thought he was a little, you know, what you might call a young, obnoxious dude, but he was a solid dude, I thought.
I left him in the locker room.
Yeah, I thought he did well in L.A., like really built up his stock. But here's another key question most people are considering. What happens when Robert Woods comes back? Because Woods was one of the great underrated receivers in the NFL for the Rams, Robert Woods.
Well, here's the deal.
What happens now?
The NFL is as much about business and putting butts in the stand as it is productivity. So if they're equal, it's a no-brainer. It's Odell. Who's going to win that battle because he puts butts in the seats. He gets viewers to watch television, whether they're haters or not. That's the sad thing about America. We build somebody up to want to tear them down. And it irks me when somebody gets hurt and people are clapping and cheering them on. Because in fantasy football, we're hypocrites. It's kind of like, this is our belief. Yeah, why don't they just kind of tweak something so he doesn't get hurt for next week, but he gets out of the game.
So
he doesn't hurt me.
Well, I was watching the game with a diehard Giant fan friend of mine. And
I can tell
you the joy he had when he saw Odell get hurt. He was jumping up and cheering. I was like, yo, man, take it easy here. You know, it's a human being there. He's like, oh, F him.
And the worst are the Philly fans. I mean, come on.
Oh,
they snowballed Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And you know what they tell me in their defense? He was a drunk.
Well, didn't they cheer when Irvin's career got ended in Philly?
Yeah, they did. They're brutal.
They're the worst fans on the planet, I think.
Well, I don't want to say the worst fans, but they're the most, let's be politically correct, the most critical fans.
They're the most negative. They're the most negative.
They are the equivalent of you in your thoughts of Trump. How's that?
Fair enough. I'll take that.
All right, let's go on to the big story here. Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
For those, do you want me to take it or you want to take it?
I'll take it. Yeah, sure. Kyler Murray basically, I think a week ago during the Super Bowl week, I think it was on a Monday or a Tuesday, he basically went out and deleted all references to the Arizona Cardinals from his Instagram account.
Left only two posts.
Yeah, he just left two posts of himself basically up. And a lot of people were, you know, of course, that sets everybody abuzz, right? Because now this is how players communicate. It's via social media, right? So they were like, what does that mean? Does he want to be cut? Does he want to be – what's Cliff Kingsbury doing? So I don't know what to make of it other than, listen, Murray is a weird dude. And by weird, I don't mean strange. I mean it's weird that someone who grew up with all this attention, being a two-sport star – he had options to go play with the Oakland A's and chose football, number one overall pick. Listen, somebody like that you would think would be used to dealing with the media, and he's not. Like, I saw a couple of interviews, one with Dan Patrick and one with Rich Eisen with Murray, around the time of the year he was drafted. And it was weird how painfully shy he was and how – difficult it was to get him to answer anything, even simple question like, are you looking forward to be drafted in the NFL? I don't know.
I can partially answer that.
What? Yeah. He just, you know, it was weird. It's almost like he was afraid to talk. So to me, that's what's weird. It's that he doesn't know how to deal with the media. So I say to myself, is this some sort of message he's setting, or is he somehow unaware of what he did? Is it more of a, like, I'm tired of this, I want to pull it out of my – I don't know what it is. I don't think it's a negotiation ploy because, listen, the Cardinals are over a barrel here. They built their whole team around Murray.
That's right. They sure did. You know,
that means their coaching staff – people forget, when you commit to someone like a Kyler Murray, a Lamar Jackson, these running quarterbacks who have very specific – plays designed for them, for these rollouts, for these quarterback draws and powers, like, changes your whole team. It means you got, first of all, you got to get receivers that can keep up with him.
The most important piece is the offensive lineman.
Absolutely. Yeah. The offensive lineman have to be able to move around. You need a different type of running back. Mm-hmm. You need to have a backup quarterback who has the same skill set as your starter, right? Because if you have Lamar Jackson, you can't have Joe Flacco as your backup.
Right.
Because he can't run that offense, right?
So the Ravens are a great example. They had that other dexterous kid who can sit there and run and throw.
Yeah, they had Griffith for a while he was still playing. Then he got hurt, and you're right, the kid whose name is number two. I can't remember his name right now.
I think something like that. I can't remember. But, you know, that reminds me of a story when Steve Young took over from Joe Montana. At first, the offensive lineman loathed him. Not personally, but because I remember one of the guys who was on Jim Rome says, yeah, I'm setting up, watching my guy, look back, he's gone.
Right.
You know? He was scrambling. And that alone, because you're talking five people.
Right.
You know, receivers will adapt, you know, but you're talking offensive linemen. So, and you hit it on the head. Kyler Murray, they built a team around him. Now, I'm not going to say that was a mistake. But I've got a couple points here. But the one point I want to say is I don't know the kid, and I've seen him play, and it was a tale of two seasons. And you can talk about the receivers not being there, et cetera, et cetera. No matter how great he is now perceived by that one play, right or wrong, in the playoffs.
Right.
Where he looked like a deer in the headlights.
Yeah, in the end zone through the interception.
And it was a pick six to the eventual Super Bowl winner to the Rams. And that play is what will epitomize him, going at least in the short term, moving forward with the contract talk. Because all his critics are going to go, look at that. And then they're going to point to his record. Now, the problem with Murray that I believe that some people have talked about, but the average fan misses, is the beating that these quarterbacks take. And he's a small kid, and he's a rusher. You know, at the end, my take is, in that playoff game, he didn't want to get hit. It has nothing to do with his fear of the opponent. His body was just that beat down. I mean, you're small, and you take those hits, and then you got Aaron Donald. you know, it's like Fernando the Bull in that Disney cartoon, a big majestic creature just chasing you down.
And not just Donald, right? You still had Leonard Floyd, you had Von Miller, like you had all these killers coming after you, basically.
Right, but the issue that Chris Mortensen sent out a tweet, and, you know, Chris Mortensen is one of the classiest men around, and, yes. And when he gets information, it's not from the Waterboy. It's right. From legit sources. And he says that Murray is described as self-centered, immature, and finger pointer, per sources. Murray is frustrated with franchise and was embarrassed by the playoff loss and thinks he's been framed as a scapegoat. I got to be honest. Those who want to play that card, I'm one of these guys. I'm because I really don't have a comeback for it because his play stunk that game.
Yeah.
To be honest. So I'm not saying it's his fault, but for him to sit there and say it wasn't his fault, it's like, come on. It's a team sport, and you're the cog of that offense. Yeah. A lot of that, a good leader would put it on his shoulders. However, I also agree with where it's headed. Despite the acrimony, they built that team around him.
Yeah, you can't just get rid of him.
And the fact that the jury is still out on his long-term potential.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a lot of trade offers.
Yeah, and part of the problem also is who do you trade him to?
Now I want to get your comment on this. Some reports are surfacing that he refused to enter the game at the end of the game in that playoff loss.
I didn't know that. I didn't hear that. But if it's true, that's horrible. Look, I believe you. I just said I haven't heard it. And if it's true, then it's bad. Because, look, he needs to grow up in the sense of being a leader. I agree with you.
He's 24, John. You know, everybody wants to play. And I'm just saying, everybody says, well, he's immature, he's a kid, he's this. And then they'll turn around and say, he's a man. Look at that leadership. You can't have it both ways.
Right.
So where do you stand on him right now?
Look, I think he has talent. I think he can make it in the league. I think this year was an anomaly. Listen, as a guy who does projections, I had Murray primed for a top 5 year in the NFL, okay?
And, where did he end?
Huh?
Where did he end?
Outside the top 10 because right. He was hurt and he didn't produce. Now, look, let's take some things into consideration here. One loss is he lost DeAndre Hopkins.
Big loss.
Huge loss.
And A.J. Green showed that time has caught up to him.
Yeah, it's caught up to him. I mean, Christian Kirk did some things. Rondale Moore still needs a year or two to get used to his new position. Zach Ertz helped a lot. They should try to retain him for Murray for next season. But
what about the belief that a great quarterback makes his receivers? I remember with Brett Favre, that was a talk about how Sterling Sharp made Brett Favre. And then after Sharp had that terrible a neck injury where he had to get a fuse and retire from the game, Favre did not miss a beat. Yeah. And he made a lot of average receivers look good. Troy Aikman, I don't think he was the best quarterback talent-wise, but he was the best fit for that Dallas offense as a game manager. But he had an arm. And
He made Alvin Harper look
much better than he was, as we saw when Alvin Harper left.
I think you're talking about great, great quarterbacks. You're absolutely right. Look, like a good point guard in basketball, right? He makes his teammates look better than he makes himself look. A true point guard, right?
Right.
In the NFL,
John Stockton type.
Right. A good quarterback should elevate the play of others. Absolutely. But at the same time, Murray was hampered. First, he lost D-Hop. Then he got hurt, and he played hurt a lot.
And do you think that had to do with size or just fluke?
I think it's both.
Or we don't know.
I think it's both. Listen, he's a small guy, like you said. But here's the thing and I think I mentioned this to you during the season a couple of times. To me, I don't think it was Murray. I think the coaching staff tried to keep him out of harm's way. Because if you notice, there were fewer designed runs, fewer times where he just took off. Whereas last season, he would take off. And that's what made him so exciting. You know, like Lamar Jackson almost, right? He would take off and zoom all over the place.
But is that a product of him realizing, man, I'm taking a beating here, and the coach is trying to protect him? And the reason I say that is you've taken what makes him special away.
Exactly.
And that's why I have questions for him.
Yeah, exactly. Personally, I think it was a coaching decision. I think it was a scheme decision. But to your point, once you take that out of the playbook, is he really a number one draft pick at that point?
No, is he
really someone like he's got a good arm, but like you said, what is he, 5'9"?
He's got a hell of an arm.
Yeah, he's 5'9", 5'10", something like that. He's a small guy. He's not your classic pocket quarterback. So what do you do with him? If he's not moving the pocket, and even if you don't send him on quarterback powers and sweeps and all that, like, is he a classic pocket passer? No, he's not. He can't survive in the pocket.
So, here's what I would do. I'm not a coach, but I would make sure that he saw game film of Steve Young later in his career, Brett Favre later in his career. You know, these are rushing QBs that learn how to be a quarterback. And then the greatest of them all, because from his rookie season, he knew and understood when to use his legs to create a better passing situation, to open up the pass, and when to use it to run. And that's Russell Wilson.
Well, I was going to say, you could see similarities there, because you don't – to be a mobile quarterback, it doesn't mean that you're taking off all the time.
That's right. Quarterbacks don't learn that until later in their career. Russell Wilson knew it from day one.
Russell Wilson's done it from day one. And listen, somebody that you don't think of doing this, who did do it a lot, who just retired, Ben Roethlisberger. Yep. When you watched him play, no one would ever accuse him of being a running quarterback, right? But – within the pocket, he would know enough to go two steps to the right, two steps to the left, two forward, three back. He always managed to move around just enough to be able to buy an extra second or two for his receivers to get open. The fact that he was a big guy helped, right, because he was hard to bring down. Yeah. But a lot of people underestimate how crafty he was in the pocket. Murray doesn't necessarily have to be taking off all the time to be effective. You can do a rolling pocket. You could have him just bounce around in the pocket, like you said, like Russell Wilson. Wilson learned early on, yes, he could take off. Wilson could take off a lot more than he does.
He's a small guy too. He's not 6 foot neither.
Right, but he's learned how to protect himself.
That's right.
And he's learned, like, he'll save it for when his team needs it, like a 3rd and 8 with the game on the line. If it's man to man, he takes off because he knows he can get the first down. Exactly. Murray, if he can pick that up, like, look, maybe a good thing is spend the offseason with Russell Wilson. Maybe they need to hook that up, you know, maybe just spend time with the guy and learn from him.
Somebody tweeted it would be a perfect trade. It'll never happen. Same division, same conference. But the Cardinals are built to win now. And the Seahawks are getting ready to go into a rebuilding mode. To trade those two, Wilson to the Cardinals, Murray to the Seahawks. Perfect situation for both. It'll never happen. But when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, that would be perfect.
That's one of those that makes sense on paper. And that's like what us analysts and column writers love to do, right? Oh man, this is perfect. Why won't they do it? Well, there's money involved. Like, Wilson's not going to come over dirt cheap, right? The Cardinals might do it because the Seahawks would do it because Murray's coming on a rookie contract. So they would take it in the heartbeat, probably, and they get a much younger quarterback that they can work with.
I agree.
Cardinals couldn't afford Wilson. I've heard the same thing, Wilson to the Giants. Yeah. Everyone here in New York, Wilson to the Giants.
Daniel Jones, he needs to be watching film on Steve Young, Favre, and Murray, because he's a big guy, and Roethlisberger. And I'm actually anxious to see what he can do with an actual – coaching staff that knows what they're doing. Real quick, the reason I said I can offer insight is agents and former players. I was blessed with the fact that KFFL was able to open doors to agents and players. And the one thing I always heard was these young men, once people discover their special talent, are never told no. And when you're a superstar at Murray's level, you're never told no, but your handlers are of the most importance. Right. And the best analogy I have is Mike Tyson. When he had I forget their names, his trainers, his handlers before Don King took over.
Customato and
Exactly. Yeah, that guy. They knew how to handle him with the media. They taught him about life. They said this is what's acceptable, what's not. And as soon as Don King came in and took over. However, we won't get into that, but he took over the kid's career. Everything went downhill, ending up with him being in prison. So I think maybe does he have handlers, or maybe it was the limelight to the point where he thought his you-know-what didn't stink. Who knows? But at the end of the day, something happened between college and after year one. Maybe he started believing in his highlight reels. Who knows? But something happened there, and I believe, though, the root of it is these kids are never told no. Yeah, early on.
There's a lot of truth to what you say, but...
it's not my opinion. This is what agents and former players have told me.
I'm saying there's a lot of truth to what you say. I agree with it. I also think, look, maybe we're just overanalyzing a little bit, and maybe it's because he was hurt.
Right. You know, I can't argue that. It could be something as simple as that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't change the fact the Cardinals still have a big question mark. Do you extend him now, or do you wait? Because if you wait and he does perform, his price tag has just gone that much higher.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd wait.
I would too. His size scares me. His size scares me.
Yeah. You've got five years.
And I want to see how he can handle the beat.
You've got five years to decide. You've got 5 years to decide. And then you can franchise him. So wait. There's no reason to rush.
That's true. Okay. Moving on. Yes. We are politics and sports, but we're also pop culture because that always intercedes with both of them. Now we know everybody loved Bob Saget. He was beloved. What I found funny about Bob Saget was this clean cut image. And then he didn't care if you saw his off-camera image was an F-bomb every other word.
Oh, one of the – hey, have you ever seen this movie called The Aristocrats?
No, I have not, but
get yourself – it's the telling of the world's dirtiest joke. There's a joke called The Aristocrats. I won't get into it, but it's supposed to be an inside joke for all comedians, right?
Right.
Bob Saget's version of The Aristocrats is one of the filthiest, raunchiest, bluest tellings that I've ever seen on film. If you thought this guy, what was his character, Mr. Tanner or whatever his name was?
I never watched it. I was a little older. So
I would love to see someone who saw him only as a sitcom guy listen to that joke. I think someone's head might explode. He was a good stand-up comic. Now, I'm not going to say great. He was a good stand-up comic, but yeah, he could be filthy dirty. Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll post it on our Facebook page, Sports Grumblings.
Yeah,
sportsgrumblings.com on Facebook. Visit it. Well, so Bob Saget passed away, and they said he died because he had a hit on his head. Well, more and more stories, anecdotally speaking, are starting to come out of people having fainting spells after their third booster or stories like that. Now, I'm not a scientist. You are. But at the end of the day, science is built around, let's look into this.
Right.
So Bob Saget has several fractures along with abrasions to his scalp. In essence, they said he died of blunt head trauma, and it wasn't a simple pop on the head. It was pretty massive. On top of that, his respiratory system was COVID positive. You know, Mr. Vaccine, multiple vaccines, and boom, still has COVID. So I just found that ironic. It has nothing to do with the story.
Right.
But the fainting does. There's also this comedian named Heather McDonald,
right,
who was doing her show, and her intro was funny. Again, if you can't laugh at yourself, then there's something wrong. Sure. And she was hammering on the anti-COVID people, but she was doing it in a funny way, ranging from her period to Jesus must love me to boom. She falls within 2 minutes of opening her show. And if you see the video, you can go on YouTube and watch it. You look like it's part of the act, their facial.
Yeah.
But that's what happens. Your face just, and she fractures her skull, you know, which begs the question to me that, okay, it's anecdotal here, there. But this is why I'm so against censoring other scientists who have different thoughts on this. It's like, is there a relation to this? I'm not saying there is, but I'm saying seeing this trend happening, I would go, we need to look into this. What are your thoughts?
Well,
first of all, what are your thoughts on Bob Saget and Heather McDonald as comedians?
Right.
Well, we already heard Bob.
Oh, as comedians, yeah. But look, Heather McDonald is not someone I particularly care for. She used to be on Chelsea Handler's show. Yes. I don't think she's horrible. I don't think she's particularly funny. So as a comedian, I really don't have an opinion on her. I saw the clip you're talking about. Yeah, she was being funny. And literally she said, I guess Jesus loves me. And then she fainted or something to that effect. So the timing of it was, like you said, I think everyone in the audience thought it was a joke. And you could see that for the first 30, 40 seconds of her being flat on her back, breathing heavily, because you could see her chest.
It was like a staccato breathing.
She was hyperventilating, okay?
Okay.
So it was obvious that she was in distress to me.
Nobody knew it at first.
Nobody knew it, right. They all thought it was part of the act. Now,
and part of that, John, was because of the face she gave. Yes, it was like this humorous type face. Like, yeah, you know? Yeah,
I saw it. No, you're right. I don't blame the people in the audience. I would have thought it was part of the act if I wasn't aware of it, you know. But to your bigger point, listen, I think with Saget, I didn't hear about the COVID in his lungs. It's interesting that you mentioned that. I didn't read about that. I did read that they think he died basically from the head trauma, which could have been anything.
That's what they concluded. It's right. Not a thing. That's what they say he died from.
Yeah. No, that's what they died. That's what the autopsy said. And they don't know how it happened. It could have been that he was in a car accident that no one knew about. He could have slipped and fell in the tub or something.
Well, yeah, they implied he fell and just went to bed. And that's what sounds fishy to a lot of people. It's like, man, when you get whacked as hard as you're saying he got whacked and he doesn't do anything about it, it's kind of like,
You would
I'm not saying it's conspiratorial, but I'm like,
No, but I'll tell you from personal experience that, yeah, you don't think anything is wrong. And that's the problem a lot of people with concussions have. They just want to go to sleep and then they never wake up. Liam Neeson's wife died from that. I think where she had a ski accident. Yeah, she was in a ski accident, but she was let go, I think, initially. They said, okay, there's nothing wrong. But she had a brain bleed that eventually took over, you know, and that's what killed her.
Yeah, but I agree with you because that's happened to me too. Because we love having to go to wait in the emergency room. Yeah. But that said, you're seeing these people. My father just had surgery, but got vaccinated, his third booster shot, a few weeks ago. And he fell walking to the bathroom, you know. See, so I'm not saying, oh, look, he fell, that proves it. But I'm just saying in my head, okay, bam, bam, bam. Is this something we need to start looking at? You know, because, again, we're still learning about the effects of this vaccine and the booster shot.
Yeah, my general gut feeling is that it's not related. And I'll tell you why. Because, first of all, you're suffering from something called recency bias. Not you personally, but people who try to put this together. One is, well, they got vaccinated. Well, sure. So did millions of other people, and nothing happened to them.
Right. The cause and effect.
Proximity effect of it. The second thing is, I'm pretty sure it's throughout the country, but like when I went to get my vaccine, when I got my booster shot, they make you stay in front of them for half an hour. They don't let you leave.
This has happened like later on, though.
No, I understand. But most adverse effects of that nature happen within a short time frame of the shot, right?
Right.
So that's why they make you...
No. I'm sorry. No, I said right. But no. They happen like 2 or 3 weeks later.
No, these did. But I'm saying typically...
Gotcha.
If you see a problem, whether it's shortness of breath, dizziness, trouble swallowing, that's why they make you...
Oh, that's right. I'm unvaxxed. I have no shame in saying that. But I remember as a kid, because in the military... As brass who overseas whatever, they line you up. I mean, they do it now to civilians, but at the time they didn't. I mean, they made us wait. We had to wait. They had to watch us for a little while. I do remember that as a kid.
Yeah, that's a well-known protocol for vaccination in general. It's not new.
Right.
So to me, I think it's more coincidence than anything else. People who are performers typically – now, what you could argue, perhaps – is that someone like Saget, if he really did have COVID and didn't know it, he may have been exhausted without realizing it.
No, he knew it. I think his wife said that he had been dealing with the COVID.
Fair enough. I didn't know that. Okay. So, but my point is that when you have COVID, one of the things that goes, the primary thing that goes, is your breathing. It's like it gets – like I've had good friends who got COVID. They were
I mean, the ICUs.
They were non-vaxxers. Breathing. They were non-vaxxers, so they got COVID. And
a lot of vaccines have gotten
I understand, but they suffered.
I mean, look at Israel.
I understand, but they suffered greatly because they weren't vaccinated. So I'm not saying they caught it necessarily because of that, but once they got it, it hit them hard because they had no defense.
You know, I'm not a scientist, so I'm doing a little pushback, but I did a lot of reading on it. It's got to, you know, our problem in America. I have a friend, a personal friend. I'm not going to say his name. I'm not going to embarrass him. And he even doesn't even know the face I made when he told me. He's a little hefty, and he's unvaxxed. He goes, and I'm not worried about it. I'm in pretty good shape. And I was like, I was like, oh, my God. I'm like, dude, you are a happy meal waiting to happen for COVID. And so I think a lot of people who are in shape, like Joe Rogan, he was doing bad. He took the ivermectin, which is used for humans too. And boom, I think a lot of it has to do with our own our own lifestyles. I mean, you yourself have lost a lot of weight. Nothing to do with COVID.
Yes.
As much as you feel much better.
Yes.
You're more energy. Your body's stronger. So, I like I said, I'm not saying, hey, this is COVID. But I do know this, that this has never been tested. I mean, they did minimal trials, but these trials take 10, 11 years. I know, you know that as a biologist, I know that through doing the paper on vaccines and big pharma. Yeah.
There's different levels of testing. Now, look, most of us will tell you the FDA, especially libertarians, will tell you the FDA should be abolished, right?
I agree, to a degree. They're political. Right.
Yeah, their requirements for testing are ridiculous.
That's why during the AIDS epidemic, a lot of rich people who could afford it
would go overseas. Yeah, absolutely. So, actually, you want to hear, it's going to be very rare, William. One of the good things Trump did was he let
people. Oh, my God!
Look, I give credit where credit is due. One of the positive things he did. And I cheered him on when he did this. He allowed people to get medication ahead of FDA approval.
Which anybody should.
You absolutely should. That's what true autonomy is, right? So
That's where the libertarian in me comes out too.
Right.
Why not give it a shot?
Right. I applauded him for that. Okay. And you know it hurts me to say it. I applauded him for that. Okay.
My friends, it kills him to say it.
It kills me to say it, but he did the right thing. But the thing to understand is that so when people say these vaccines are untested, that's not true.
No. They went through a short testing period. And
they went through an accelerated testing period.
Yeah, but nowhere near as intense as what they.
Agreed. Yeah. And the truth is, do we know the law?
Hold on, John, a question regarding that. They went through the testing, but there's no way they could tell the long term effects in that short amount of time.
Right. The long term effects are unknown, but because of the mechanism of the vaccine, the mechanism of the virus itself, you know, you can project certain things. And look, everything's a probability, okay? If you're a scientist, a biologist, a virologist, a mathematician, a computer, the guy who builds the models, right? Everything.
Well, yeah, the doctor right. who they censored, who actually was the mRNA, whatever that term is.
Messenger RNA-based technology, mRNA, yeah.
You know, so he was talking about that too.
Yeah, and look, I've heard some doctors say, the vaccine this, the vaccine that, I'd rather not take. Look, that's their opinion, and I'm not for censoring them.
Oh, and I know that. You know, guys, I sit there and pick on Big John a lot
because
he's the nicest guy, and I can run over people. Yeah. So I'll be honest. I take advantage of that.
That's okay. That's okay. But I want people to understand, I'm not against censorship, but I think that this sort of that a lot of people who get hyped up, right? And it's not just – I'm not just blaming Trump people on this. So do Biden people, you know. So do leftists.
The sheep on both sides.
The sheep on both sides, and they get hyped up. And I'm like, if we were all reasonable, we wouldn't be in this mess, right? But I think the thing what you said about the fainting possibly – look, I'm open to the possibility – but I think the overwhelming odds are that it's not related. But if someone said to me, here's a study, here's what we did, and you know what, John, you should pay attention because there seems to be perhaps a link. And look, sometimes all this time I thought fish oil was good for my heart, right?
Yeah. I just read articles too. I'm like, really? I didn't.
Figured out that the studies they conducted that were long-term studies – like, I mean, they went on for 20, 25 years, okay? And they would say, like, oh, fish oil. And this goes to prove a point. It turns out that fish oil doesn't hurt or harm your heart, okay? It's very neutral. The reason they thought it helped was because they only looked at fish oil. They didn't look at, for example, a lot of the people who ate a lot of fish, the Japanese, the Mediterraneans, right?
And
why did they live longer and have lower heart disease? Well, guess what else they did? They exercised a lot. They didn't eat a lot of refined sugars.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. The Eskimos, they eat a lot of blubber. You know, real quick, most don't realize I worked in the Alzheimer's Association Marketing Fundraising.
Yes, you did.
I'm very proud of what I did there. Stories for another day. But I'll tell you this, John. The Alzheimer's Association is built around the caregiver, not the patient. But that didn't stop Big Pharma from always knocking on my door, wanting me to push certain things. And I discovered that back in the 80s, and this is one reason why we got HMOs, was the greed of the doctor. Big Pharma was able to bribe them, literally, push our drug. They get free trips to Hawaii. They get bonuses. They get the tickets to whatever, you know. So never put it past Big Pharma to push bad medicine, the opioids. You know, it's not that the medicine's bad, it's the addictive process. We've talked about people who talk about illegal drugs being the bane of this world. And I'm like, well, what about the prescription drugs?
Yeah.
You know, so again, I'm my take as an analyst stats guy, because when we started doing the stats breakdown, there was nothing there. We helped create this for fantasy sports.
Right.
And there were a lot of criteria that I eventually, after a year or so, we don't need that. It's not affecting it. But I kept logging it in my Excel spreadsheet. And that's how I view this. I'm like, look, if there's enough anecdotal information, we as scientists, not myself, but those scientists, have a responsibility to look into it. And that's all I ask.
Yeah.
I just anecdotal is not science, but that's how you get to science. Notice that trend.
Yeah, well, the science is actually the process. Form a hypothesis, test it, see if it's repeatable, draw a conclusion, blah, 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 blah. Science is a process. People think science is a subject or like chemistry, right? It's not. Science is literally, if you look up the definition of science, it's a methodology.
Yep,
arriving at a conclusion, right? And it's a very disciplined way of asking and answering questions. So part of science is constantly questioning.
That's right.
Part of science. As a scientist, I have no problem with Joe Rogan. I have no problem with these doctors, whether they're hacks or not, proposing these like theories and putting forth. But my point is, yes, have a scientist come on, put forth his hypothesis, explain it to me, tell me what testing you did, and then allow me to repeat it. That's science, okay?
Right.
What I object to is the politicization of the science, which is, for example, as soon as a study comes up, you have the liberals saying, see, this is why you need a mask. This is why you got to mask children. And the Republicans start saying, see, this is why it's a hoax, right?
Yeah, Republicans aren't saying that, though. They're not saying that. They're saying what you're saying. It's just they're being drowned out. And case in point is the John Hopkins study. The media ignored it, you know. Completely different topic, but all the information that's been coming out the last few days about the Durham report, media's not covering it. My take is, and we'll talk about that another day, but my take is that's where the failure begins and ends. The media's taking a side. And that's what's causing the division. But they weren't always as open about it. And the courts take the side of the media when you try to take it to court. I think we have to protect the media, because at the end of the day, the government wants to take over the media. But when we're in the position we're in right now, I think the courts need to look at the media like they do any other individual. It's that blatant.
In terms of what? This is coming
from somebody who's seen Torrijos and Noriega in action.
In terms of what? I'm sorry. Expand on that. In terms of what? Look at
Courts have stated that the threshold is so much higher for libel. Yeah. And I think that needs to be rethought of. I'm not saying send the media to jail or this or that, but I mean, based on how bad the media has gotten, that needs to be looked at. And the reason I say the courts, because you can't trust the politicians to do it right.
You can't trust the politicians. And I think, are you referring to the Sarah Palin case?
Well, that's just one of many. That's just the latest.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I can understand when a court, I remember I learned about it when I was a teenager. There was an au pair out of Boston, and the verdict came back with the ruling for the family, and the judge said no because the threshold wasn't met. So I understand that. And that's what I'm talking about. This judge abused his power, I think, because he came out publicly before the jury had made their decision. I'm throwing the case out. There was no, I forget the term, where they keep the jury from seeing the media. So the jury's immediately being counted.
They were recluse.
Yeah, they weren't recused in terms of not being – they still had access.
Right.
So I'm like, you just tainted the jury because they're going to look at that and go, what the hell are we doing here?
Right.
I've been here for 5 days. So I just think the courts need to be reined in a bit to do their job. And you rein them in by impeaching some of the abusive ones. but Democrats and Republicans have to come together, and we're so divided it's not. So
no, it's not going to happen.
I don't think anything's ever going to change.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Yeah, it's not going
to
happen.
And at the end of the day, it's up to the people to start getting educated and then not. But we're rambling on. So, and we've gone over a lot of time. So we're going to close this out. We recap this. You know, we talked Super Bowl, all aspects of it. We talked the mask hypocrisy a lot because we disagreed on that.
Sure.
And we ended it with the Bob Saget. And it's a shame that Bob Saget is gone. I'm not a big Bob Saget fan, but Full House was that era. And, it, you know, somebody in his 60s, I'm like, oh, my God, you know. So tomorrow we're going to be talking about the NBA. And John's going to bring in one of his top guys and sit there and break it down for us. I'm really curious about this trade involving Harper because a lot of people are stating that it was a great trade.
Harden,
I'm sorry, in terms of getting rid of him. But my thought is, well, look how much they gave up for him the year before. So I want to ask questions on that.
Yeah, we're gonna have the editor in chief of Nerd Fantasy Sports come on. Dennis Velasco, and he'll talk about all the trades, break them down for us, and certainly he'll talk some NBA. He's my hoops expert, you know, and to have him on to get his knowledge, I think the viewers will really enjoy themselves with it.
All right, people, and the conservative Latino, the libertarian, both of us are fantasy sports pioneers. We are signing off. Y'all have a wonderful day.
Peace, America.